Welcome to Look Behind the Look, the celebrated podcast that explores your favorite looks in film, television, and fashion history. Through conversations with the fashion world's elite and award-winning hair, makeup, and costume designers on sets around the world, you will see and hear exciting tales from behind the scenes, career origin stories, and tons of advice and tips. I'm your host, Tiffany Bartok. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Look Behind the Look. This episode is a little different this week. We are taking a look at a documentary that I saw at South by Southwest and is coming out now. It is coming out April 9th. That's today. You may have already seen it, and now you're listening to a little bit more about it by listening to this podcast. My interview with the director, Eva Orner, was audio only, and I didn't have my regular setup, so it's the sound may take a little bit of getting used to, but what we talk about is the terrible world of fast fashion, what it's doing to our earth, but also we take a microscopic look into Brandy Melville, the company, the way that it's run. You're not going to be happy about anything that you see. It's really infuriating, but I'm so happy that the word is out about how this company has treated so many people and how the world of fast fashion is directly affecting our planet. Brandy Melville and the Cult of Fast Fashion, out today, April 9th, on HBO Max. And here's my conversation with the director, Eva Orner.
I heard about Brandy first when I was in seventh grade. Everyone was wearing it at school. I walked into the store and I bought the star necklace. I felt so cool and accepted.
The reason why I liked it, because everyone else liked it.
Brandy Melville is an incredibly successful business. It's impossible to talk about Brandy Melville and not talk about social media. It was teenagers taking photos of teenagers. It felt genuine because it was genuine.
And kind of behind the curtain, no one has any idea that this man with sneakers and sweatpants on was running the Instagram that all these teenage girls are like fanning over. This place is not your conventional clothing company.
Brandy Melville was this phenomenon with one-size-fits-all clothing.
There was a stereotype against Brandy Melville for only hiring skinny white girls.
Blonde hair, skinny, small.
She's obviously, like, beautiful.
The girls would go to the factory where a lot of things are made.
China or to Italy.
And then the girls would pick out stuff that they like.
Then you go into the stock room and you see all the other people who are working there who are not white.
Eva, thank you so much for making this film. Everyone sort of has been talking about all of the toxicity of Brandy Melville, and I didn't know anything about it until I heard about what was going on, but many people do not know. So it's so great that you made this. I wondered what attracted you to it first. Was it a story that you heard, or what have you been tracking fast fashion?
I really wanted to do something on fast fashion for the last few years. And I made an effort, you know, over the, I guess the last decade to really, you know, make sure I was buying sustainably. I'm using air quotes to say sustainably. And so I was buying all these brands that said they were sustainable. And then I started doing some research and I realized it really didn't mean very much. You know, they were still made in kind of sweatshops in developing countries. The fabrics were often not natural, or you couldn't tell where they were from. There was a lot of exploitation, and I was like, how is this sustainable? And it sort of dawned on me that there's really very, very little regulation in the global fashion industry. And it's this massive, you know, multi-trillion dollar global industry that I believe employs like 1 in 4 people on the planet. I mean, it's just enormous industry. How do you regulate it globally? Things are happening to do that slowly with governments working together, but you know, we all know how governments work together so well. So it's definitely a really tricky industry. So I really wanted to do something on that. I've been talking with Simon and Jonathan Chin, who are the producers of the film, who run a company called Lightbox. And I'd mentioned to them that I wanted to do something on fashion and I hadn't found the story. And then they came back to me with the Brandy Melville story. And I have to admit, I did not know Brandy. I do not have like a teenage daughter. I am not a teenager. It was outside my world. And I did some research and I was like, oh, this is interesting. And one of the things I wanted to do was kind of merge the two ideas, which was tell make an expose about a very dubious company with terrible business practices and a really horrible history of exploiting young women, and also marry that with the bigger picture of the fast fashion global industry.
Yes.
What it is, what is wrong with it, and what we can do better.
Yes.
And I wanted people to also see the film and not come out of it being like, well, this is terrible, but what am I supposed to do? Because
exactly.
It can be very complicated, and it's not an easy solution. So that were all the things that I wanted to address.
Wonderful. Yeah, you definitely achieved all of that education, because I love the structure of the film. Usually it's front loaded with, you know, the Brandy Melville story, and then we go to Africa and never come back, and like sort of some people can sadly trail off and not really, but I loved how you weaved it, because it really kept everything, you know, your attention was being paid throughout, and it was really, I didn't turn away, and really seeing, just instead of visually, those big truck, I guess they're boats and barges of those clothes that are being shipped to who knows where. And we really got to meet the people that are saying, what can we do with this? What do you expect us to do with all of this garbage that you're sending? You know, there's a problem I think that I keep hearing is that you have to be rich to be sustainable, in responsible in fashion. What do you have to say to that? Like, I can only afford Zara. I can only afford, you know, H&M.
Yeah, it's a really good question. And it's, you know, it's such a not easy solution.
Right.
The biggest message for me in this film is, which is the last line of the film, is we need to buy less. You know, think about when you were a kid growing up, how many t-shirts did you have? How many pairs of pants did you have? How often did you go shopping? Like when I was a kid, I hated all of that stuff. And I literally had like three of everything. And if you look at our closets over the last 20 years, they've just exploded. We buy so much. And
right.
Since obviously social media has been a huge one. And I was so guilty of this as well. You know, the Instagram thing where the algorithm perfectly tailors what you like, and you just get things popping up all the time. And you're like, oh, that's so cute. Oh my God, it's on sale. I'm going to buy it. And you've got it tomorrow. And so I also had this exploding closet, which is why I started getting interested in this, because it felt wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the first thing that people can do is buy less. So in terms of people saying, oh, it's expensive, it's like, no, it's not. You should just buy less things.
Yes.
But I think you're right. You know, there is this thing of like, you know, a t-shirt that is made from, you know, made locally with organic cotton, with local American workers in a fair factory where everyone's getting insurance. You know, that t-shirt is probably not going to cost $10.
Right.
I totally understand that. You know, there are so many vintage places to buy things now, and you know, high end, you can go to the Real Real if you want designer stuff. But there's Depop, which all the kids are on now, where you can buy, you know, H&M and Zara and Brandy Melville. And sure, it's not going to last as long as the really well made stuff. But there is this way of having a second and third life of all your clothing. There's really very little reason to buy new things. You know, there are too many clothes on the planet. Vintage kids are into, you know, kids, everyone is into vintage. You know, people can resell their stuff, they can share. I mean, I do this all the time with my friends. When we're sick of something or something's not fitting, we all get together and swap clothing. We've got
yes, of course.
So many solutions that are better than, you know, picking up a phone and just buying something on TikTok or Instagram. And I think that's one of the biggest things. So I think it's about simplifying the confusion of it all.
Yes.
Secondhand vintage is cool. you know, mending is cool. Like everyone should learn to sew.
And
our parents and grandparents did. It sounds so dorky, but it's so cool to be able to fix something.
It's true.
A second life, or turn it into something else. And the biggest thing, you know, I really think just buying less is the answer. How much do we need?
Why can't we do
the same thing again and again?
And normal, the one takeaway that I loved, and I keep thinking about it while I'm here at South By, is like, you know, why can't you just wear an outfit again? It sounds so.
See, that's one of the things, you know, I'm not a big fan of, you know, royal families and things like that, and also the celebrity love, but, you know, we're increasingly seeing people like Kate Middleton,
Angelina.
Like re-wearing clothing. I mean,
yes.
James Bond has been doing it for years, and it's like, it's like, it's kind of, I think it's cool to be photographed in the same thing, not necessarily the next day, but, you know, a few months later, why not? Why is that, you know? And it's interesting that when Kate, I think she was the first really high profile person to start doing this, and it was like scandalous, you know, she was wearing the same dress twice. You know, it's like the fact that that is not normal, I think is interesting. And one of the people in the film actually says that. She said, we need to normalize the fact that, hey, I wore this today and I can wear it again tomorrow or the next day. It's so not normal that we think that that's not okay.
Exactly. Yes. I did remember that. And I love that they're doing yard work right here for us. Isn't that wonderful? We are in Austin, people, and there are yards. You live in LA. I live in New York. There are no yards, so we don't have these problems.
No, we've always got leaf blowers during interviews.
Okay. Yeah. You know the struggle. This is new to me in suburbia here. When is the, now this will be coming out when the HBO release is, and when is that?
It's coming to HBO very soon, and there will be lots of announcements in the weeks ahead.
Yes.
And we're very excited about.
These are happening more and more. What you found in yours, just in addition to the fast fashion, was the anti-Semitism and the racism in the workplace. And it had to be challenging structurally to introduce that into the film. Did you keep anything in mind about when you were, how you were going to piece in all of these problems, what the main focus would be? And
yeah, that's a good question. I mean, this is an ambitious film because it's not just, you know, I think a lot of filmmakers would say, let's just make a film about Brandy, make it an expose, and it's chronological and it's much simpler. And I always like to complicate things because I take the opportunity to say more and to really give the audience things to think about at the end of the film other than, oh, what a terrible company. I'm not going to shop there anymore. I wanted it to be more I wanted to sort of try and answer some questions. Well, what should we do? Because this is all terrible, but now I'm left not knowing what to do. And I think that happens a lot. So I think, I think structurally, I had a lot of things that I wanted to put in the film. And, you know, you kind of write it all up, you film it, and then you get into the edit. And I'll shout out to Claire Didier, our fabulous editor. You know, it's such a great, documentaries come together in the edit.
Of course. And,
I mean, you spend so much time researching and finding characters and filming, and that's a massive part of it. I don't want to minimize that at all. Then you get into the edit and it's kind of like, this is what I think. And then the editor's kind of like, okay, I can see some problems here or usually they're just kind of like, quite frankly, they have better ideas because they're seeing the footage fresh and you've had it in your head for so long.
That's true. Yeah.
That's my favorite part is when, and the editors are usually, you know, incredibly respectful and we work really well together and become great friends because we work together for so long. But when they come up with something fresh that you've never thought of, it's like, and it works. Because sometimes it's like, oh God, that's terrible. What were you thinking? Right. And when something works, it's kind of like, oh God, that's genius. And it's like, they're still using the footage you shot and the ideas you had. They're just seeing it with a fresh eye. And I find that one of my favorite part of good editors. It's like having a new person come in with a new clear slate and just seeing, you know, sometimes seeing things in characters that you didn't see, or I don't know, it's really, really fun. So I think Claire did a really great job of weaving all these ideas together. You know, the main story is definitely the Brandy Melville expose, which is super important, but then there's all these other themes and stories underneath that. And I think, I hope that it all kind of comes together cohesively as one film and one idea.
It absolutely did. It strengthened everything, I think. It never was a distraction. And I think it all complemented each other really well. You know, when you were describing the process just now, it reminded me of therapy. Like you come in and you're like, I've got all this history and, you know, emotion. And then they say, okay, well, what I'm seeing is this, 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 and this. And you work together to sort of make it all make sense.
Yeah, I'll tell Claire you said she was my therapist. She would agree.
Well, I thank you for making this film. It's amazing. And I know everybody's going to really devour it because a lot of people are going to be excited, more so than the article that sort of fell flat, which was interesting. The expose article that didn't, it sort of was the igniter, I think. And so now maybe people will be ready to listen.
Yeah. So the journalist, I should say, the journalist who did the expose, who really uncovered the story, Kate Taylor, is in the film. And I think she's great in the film. And I think she did a really great job. But, you know, this is, and again, we talk about this in the film, there's like a scandal or an expose every day now. So I think, the impact sometimes that the press can have on these scandals sometimes isn't what you would expect. And I'm hoping that, you know, a documentary that goes out on HBO will have a bigger, broader effect. And also, it's a very visual, this is the other thing, it's a very visual story. And so in print, you're not quite capturing, you know, you need to
tell
see
me about it. That's so true. I don't mean to interrupt, but I, you know, if I like went to, I think I went to go get a coffee or something and I had to rewind it because I missed, you know, the social media is a great use of social media. Sometimes that's overdone. And this was a really great use of it.
Yeah, so I think, you know, I want to give, you know, enormous credit to Kate because she really uncovered this story. And like, it was a great continuum to her journalistic work. And, and the other thing that I really, you know, this film is made by the young women who agreed to share their stories, the ex-Brandy employees. And I spoke to like hundreds of them.
Wow.
And it's really interesting. Most of them didn't want to. They wanted to talk to me, but they didn't want to go on camera and share their films. And I understand young women, it's a really tricky story. And a lot of them were scared, you know, and I really respected that. But, you know, the women that actually spoke out and agreed to talk, I think are brave and fearless, and they're the real heroes of the story. And I hope that it also encourages other young girls to feel and see the strength that they have and the power that they have.
Yeah.
And that speaking out is a good thing.
Yes.
So respect for the girls.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I'm really proud of them. I feel like they've really done something extraordinary.
Yes, and you took good care of them. So
I love them.
All right, Eva. Well, have a great time with your remaining time at South By. And I can't wait for this release. And it's really going to reach a lot of people and change things, I think. So
I would say thank you so much.
Take care.
Hi.
Look Behind the Look is a Vinyl Foot production written by me, your host, Tiffany Bartok, produced by Jace Bartok, edited by Nicole Tucker. If you're interested in learning more, find our video version on the YouTube channel Look Behind the Look podcast. There you can see rare photos and clips from our guests. And please follow us on Twitter at Look Behind Pod and Instagram at Look Behind the Look. If you like the show, please rate, review, and subscribe. And tell your friends and spread the word. You can subscribe to us on iTunes or any podcatcher of your choice. Thanks for listening to Look Behind the Look.